On this ninth day of November, 2011, in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And we are reading from Chapter 6, called Dhyana Yoga. Text number 5. Udhareratmanatmanam Natmanam Bhavasarit Atmaya Vayatmano Bandhur Atmaya Varupur Atmanaha. One must deliver himself with the help of his mind and not degrade himself. The mind is the friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. Purport. The word Atma denotes body, mind, and soul, depending upon different circumstances. In the yoga system, the mind and the conditioned soul are especially important. Since the mind is the central point of yoga practice, Atma refers here to the mind. The purpose of the yoga system is to control the mind and to draw it away from attachment to sense objects. It is stressed herein that the mind must be so trained that it can deliver the conditioned soul from the mire of nescience. In material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind and senses. In material existence, one is subjected to the influence of the mind and the senses. In fact, the pure soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. Therefore, the mind should be trained so that it will not be attracted by the glitter of material nature. And in this way, the conditioned soul may be saved. One should not degrade oneself by attraction to sense objects. The more one is attracted by sense objects, the more one becomes entangled in material existence. The best way to disentangle oneself is to always engage the mind in Krishna consciousness. The word he is used for emphasis, for emphasizing this point, that is, that one must do this. It is also said, mana eva manushyanam karanam bandha mokshayoho bandhaya vishayasango muktyai nirvishayam manaha. For man, mind is the cause of bondage and mind is the cause of liberation. Mind absorbed in sense objects is the cause of bondage, and mind detached from the sense objects is the cause of liberation. This is from the Amrita Bindu Upanishad 2. Therefore, the mind which is always engaged in Krishna consciousness is the cause of supreme liberation. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Jnanandana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisance unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So, very essential instruction from Krishna. In any yoga practice, even in, for one thing, can we take that water bottle off of there? Just put it on the floor. Thank you, Bob. In any yoga practice, ultimately you come down to the mind. Now, the mind and the senses work together. Really, they're just like it said, that the mind is said to be the sixth sense. What is that? Mamai bangsho jiva loke jiva bhutas manak shashtan indriyani pakatistani karshati. So the living entity is Krishna's eternal part and parcel and is struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind. So you remember in the third chapter, we heard tasma tvam indriyani ado niyam nebhadatarshiba. If you want to become free from the enemy of lust, then one has to, first of all, control the senses. Well, how does that happen? You have to control the mind. And the way you do that is by strengthening the intelligence. That comes out in that third chapter at the end. Evam buddhe putam buddhasam sabhyavanam atmanam. By strong intelligence, realizing that you're transcendental even to the intelligence, you should control the lower self. So we've already heard hints of this process, but the question is how to do it. So this sixth chapter gives us one way to do it. It's almost like a technical process. of pranayama, pratyahara, living alone, separating oneself from the sense objects. There's a lot of that in this Ashtanga yoga, just getting away so you're not distracted. But the ultimate result, the ultimate benefit or goal of this is this control of the mind and the fixing the mind on the self, capital S self, ultimately. So here, Krishna makes this statement, which is pertinent for everyone, that the mind is the enemy of the soul and his friend as well, depending on what the state the mind is in. Now, in an ordinary conditioned life, the mind is the worst enemy because it's the repository, the main repository of this karma. Krishna declared, this is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the living entity. So let's say the mind and this karma, they work together. You get two enemies working together, right? One is actually helping the other. And we go through life, ordinary life. People have absolutely no inkling of any of this, right? And they simply are being moved by varieties of desire that arise in the mind due to association with the objects of the senses, due to past activities. This is ultimately called sangha. Sangat sanjayate kama. We heard in the second chapter. According to how you associate, you develop certain desires. Now, it gets to be very complicated because what you desired yesterday is going to also affect what you desire today. You become conditioned to a certain kind of mode of nature. And Krishna describes in the 17th chapter, 14th chapter, how someone who's in that mode, it means the mind is working in a certain mode, then you, say, passion with a good dollop of ignorance. Okay, they don't appear, you know, just alone. So you'll be attracted to, a certain kind of food, a certain kind of person, a certain kind of music, a certain kind of art, a certain kind of way of being. And that'll be your way of life, you know. And you'll be comfortable in that mode. If you're suddenly a person in the mode of passion is put into a concert, a Mozart concert, you'll get fidgety. And it doesn't relate to me. And conversely, someone who's into classical music gets into a hip-hop concert, it's noise. It's just noise. But it's all depending on the mind. The soul is basically the same. It's just writing, you see. So how do we make this, train the mind now, which is our enemy, and it's kind of keeping us bound here, to be our friend? That's the key. And how, first of all, you have to have the knowledge to understand that just like you would train a muscle, right? Someone wants to become a good skier or something. Well, then, you find a ski instructor, you go on the slopes, you read a book or you learn lessons how to do it without hurting yourself, how to do it most efficiently so you can learn how to be a good skier, right? There's some desire, but you don't have the facility yet. But you train your muscles, you train your nervous system, and everything. And before long, if you're persistent, you get to be pretty good at skiing. So what did you do there? You basically changed your mind and your senses and your nervous system by your intelligence. The intelligence is what has the imagination. Oh, I'd really like to be that skier. And then you do the necessary steps in order to get to that point. So spiritual life is like that also. But we're training the mind and the senses to stay connected to Krishna, to stay connected to the Absolute. And there's a procedure for doing it. But now he's giving the stark alternative. Udhared atmanat. One should deliver oneself by the mind, not degrade oneself. So what we allow the mind to perceive, that's either going to be degrading or elevating. And up until, Krishna consciousness movement became prominent, everything, people didn't have the alternative. They had no understanding. But a fortunate few, that's why book distribution is so important. It gives people the alternative. If they're receptive to the message, then you can see, yes, I should be careful what I do with my mind and senses. Because that's your destiny. You're making it every day, every moment. So how to train the mind, that will come in this Ashtanga yoga, there's a procedure. And also, of course, in Bhakti yoga, there is also a strict procedure. So let's go through this purport. But this is very illuminating. First of all, Prabhupada says the Atma denotes body, mind, and soul. Now, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find that it denotes even more things. It can mean the body, the mind, the soul, the intelligence. The supersoul is also the Atma. So it depends on the context. And as Prabhupada mentions, in this context, in the yoga system, these two words, Atma, Atma, refer to the soul and the mind. That's basically what's being talked about. So the purpose of yoga is to control the mind, draw it away from the attachment to sense objects. So one of the means of doing it, as we mentioned, is literally going away from those objects. That's why Krishna says it was a secluded place. And that means, you know, a sattvic place in the forest or the Himalayas or somewhere, where the out of mind, you know, out of sight, out of mind, it is said, right? So if you're not seeing or hearing or smelling the object of the senses, then they'll be out of mind. Now, if you don't have some other, transcendental object to see and smell and taste and hear, then you'll have the memories. It'll be very difficult to control. And that's why this system is so difficult, because you're trying to, you know, wrestle the mind down, you know, without a superior object, you know, to be attached to. And so that's why Arjuna says it's more difficult than controlling the wind. But Krishna consciousness is easier, because you don't separate so much as substitute. You know, you want to see beautiful things, you see the beautiful form of Krishna. You know, we want to taste, we want to hear sounds. All the senses are involved, the mind is involved. And if you, there are austerities involved because we were addicts. You know, we're addicted over lifetimes to sense gratification. So there is austerity, but it's not like these Ashtanga yogis. This is practically inconceivable for us. So the soul is entangled in the material world because the mind is involved with the false ego, which desires to lord it over material nature. So these different elements, they work together. The false ego is that false sense of self. We want to lord it over material nature, and the mind and the senses give us the facility to do that. Where do they come from? They've been given to us by material nature under the instruction, ultimately, of Krishna. Krishna gives this whole material world. What's the purpose of it? Twofold. One is to work out our unfulfilled material desires, but more importantly is to become convinced that there's no percentage in it, that there's really no success in this, that we'll be suffering as long as we keep trying this to avoid Krishna. So it's really a reformatory. And that's why there are always saints and sages, genuine devotees on the planet. And Krishna comes and speaks his book. He sends Prabhupada to translate it into all languages. It's all Krishna's desire that we reform our way of being in this world so that the mind can become our friend. The mind that is spontaneously attracted to thinking of Krishna is really the friend of the soul. But that takes training. That's what we're trying to achieve. So one should not degrade oneself, you know. And it's very obvious that some people, if the mind becomes so disturbed, you can't practice any kind of yoga. You know, this is endemic today. The environment is so agitating and so disruptive that people need drugs just to concentrate, just to sleep. You know. And that's a very tragic, it's a sad condition. You know, so if we can chant Hare Krishna and try to concentrate, that is the greatest blessing. If we're able to focus on the holy name, even to some degree, we should cultivate that more and more. You know, we find that the attraction to the holy name, you can pray for that. Because if the mind is able to calm itself so that you can perceive, you know, the Krishna in the holy name and become peaceful and satisfied just chanting and hearing, chanting and hearing. That's a very blessed state to be in. So we should try to cultivate that. Okay, should we go on? The friend and the enemy. What is it? Go ahead.
Prabhu, the people living in the temple, they have the environment is very good. So for me, I travel everywhere.
Uh-huh.
In the office, I have a project manager, which is a lady. and she dresses up very well, and she talks about more chivalry, etc., etc., etc.
Chivalry?
Jewels.
Oh, jewels. Jewelry. I'm sorry. I thought it was chivalry.
That's what happened in the morning.
Yeah.
She said, okay, my dad is this, my husband is this, this is what happened. I know we'll control the mind, but still what happens is that passion, somehow it attracts. Oh, okay, why don't I also buy for my wife? So for that I should earn more, you know, that kind of feeling. And of course, coming to Krishna consciousness is definitely helping us.
Yeah.
But still, you know, it's difficult when we go out because, you know, when we say always association of devotees, how long we'll associate with the devotees all the day? Because we'll, out of 24 hours, we'll be 11 to 12 hours in the office.
Yeah. 11 to 12 hours.
Yeah.
Wow.
So in that case, what do we do?
This is a real, you know, problem. I mean, this is why it's so fortunate to be able to be immersed in this association, as you said. So, the you have to have a period of in the morning, you know, when you practice intense sadhana. The longer you can do that, the more time you can carve out in the morning, and a place. You know, now if you're traveling all over, you're obviously not in your home.
I'm in a hotel. So.
Your hotel. So you have to. One of your bags has to be like your little portable altar. Maybe you already have that. You open that bag, and you have maybe pictures or even some deities. You know, and everything. You need to be able to create a sacred space, so that you can have as intense a program in the morning as you can. Because it's that morning hours that's going to set the mood for the whole day. You know. And the kirtan, reading, you know, some kind of worship or offering, food stuff, you know, even if it's a picture, you know, there's a way of doing it. So of course, so much recorded. There's so much recorded lectures, you know, you can hear Prabhupada, there's so much stuff. And even videos, you know, of maybe Mangalarti in, you know, somewhere. I mean, nowadays you can see Mangalarti. You get on the internet, you can see it. You know what I mean? You have to figure out a way that you can have a really rich program as far as possible for yourself every day, if possible. And of course, you're right. You get association, and the mode of passion is there, and so many things. You know, maybe at a certain point you can excuse yourself for 5 minutes, an hour, and go chant some really intense verses and meditate and pray. You know, pray that this mode of passion won't overwhelm you. You have to keep the connection. And when there's an opportunity for more extended, just like if you work a regular job, sometimes you say, well, there'll be a week off, or there'll be an extended weekend, right? So take advantage of a full immersion. You know, go to a temple, maybe stay overnight and take part in the whole program and do some service during the day. And this is why we have special events. You know, every so often there's a holiday coming. Every so often the Kadashi coming. Then there's it's Kartik. Okay, let's go to, you know, Vrindavan. I know I have a friend in Canada, Toronto. He and his wife work. She's a lawyer. He's an executive in a computer production thing. And they were able to take a week off and go to Vrindavan and do like a yatra with Radhanath Swami for a week as a disciple, you know, and come back. So it's difficult in household life. There's no question about it. But if you're determined, you know, Krishna will give you the opportunity to be able to stay strong even in that situation. And when there's an opportunity for full immersion, you have to, you know, take it. That's the best we can do. Hare Krishna. Okay, let's go on. Bandaratmatmanastasya. Yenatmaya vatmanajitaha. Anatmanastu shatrutve. Vartetatmaya vashatruvat. For him who has conquered the mind is the best of friends. But for one who has failed to do so, his mind will remain the greatest enemy. The purpose of practicing Eightfold Yoga is to control the mind in order to make it a friend in discharging the human mission. Unless the mind is controlled, the practice of yoga for show is simply a waste of time. One who cannot control his mind lives always with the greatest enemy, and thus his life and his mission are spoiled. The constitutional position of the living entity is to carry out the order of the superior. As long as one's mind remains an unconquered enemy, one has to serve the dictations of lust, anger, avarice, illusion, etc. But when the mind is conquered, one voluntarily agrees to abide by the dictation of the personality of Godhead, who is situated within the heart of everyone as Paramatma. Real yoga practice entails meeting the Paramatma within the heart and then following his dictation. For one who takes to Krishna consciousness directly, perfect surrender to the dictation of the Lord follows automatically. Now, this is something we experience all the time. And what I mean by that is that when we chant Hare Krishna on the rounds, and we have our kirtan and the whole morning program, which is very rich. When you think of the morning program, you realize if you read the Nectar of Devotion, oh, these are the five most important practices that Rupa Goswami singles out. There are 64 practices of devotional service, and among those, actually, is Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, but there are many more details. But he says, of these 64, the five most important ones are associating with devotees, chanting Hare Krishna, studying Srimad Bhagavatam regularly, living in a holy place, and worshiping the deity with reverence and devotion. Those are the five. So think about it. That's the morning program. I mean, for those who spend the morning program in the temple, you know, that's what we're doing. We're chanting Hare Krishna. We're amongst the devotees. We're certainly studying Bhagavatam every day, very integral part. The deities are there, and it's all in a holy place. Everything's going on. So it is said, even a little attraction from one of them, you can make great advancement. So all of that is meant to conquer the mind. Here, you know, the thing is presented in terms of like a battle, right? You're on a battlefield. So it's a battle. The mind is telling you to do this, telling you to do that. And if you have no other instruction, if your intelligence is under the control of the mind, is also in the mode of passion, and hasn't been purified or strengthened by exposure to the genuine philosophy and genuine devotees, then you're helpless. You're in the grip of that enemy. And people are going around following their minds all the time. That's what's going on. And when you die, the gross body is finished, and the mind, you know, and its intelligence, it takes you to the other body. You know? That's the template. You've made your template, now you'll get a gross body to fulfill it. If you've lived an animalistic life, you may very well get an animal's body. They also have mind and intelligence, much more rudimentary. And there's no possibility of doing any kind of yoga or advancement in that lower body. It's a tragedy. That's why Krishna says, Mahato Bayat. You know, this is the greatest fearful danger, is to lose the human form of life. So, how to make the mind one's friend. Now, when we chant the holy name, you know, if someone is seriously chanting japa, you experience, right, the difference between the self and the mind. Here you are, you know, you're trying to hear, but the mind is not, you know, is going here, is going there. And you're hearing the holy name sporadically, you know. Every so often there's some concentration, then the mind again goes off here. That's the sadhana. That is the most important sadhana. is to bring the mind back and focus the mind. But what you do the rest of the time affects what happens when you sit down and chant. Because one of the things that we should always remember, it's interesting, in this chapter, Krishna's speaking, of course, but he's presenting really kind of a technical process. Okay, here's what you do. You go off alone, you sit on a certain seat, you practice pranayama. This is, you know, this is just like lifting weights or something. It's a certain practice, right? And then gradually the mind. But in bhakti yoga, Krishna is there. He's helping you. You know, he's helping you to control your mind. And there are so many prayers like that. One that comes to mind is this song by Rupa Goswami that Prabhupada actually quotes in a purport in the second canto. I forget which verse. And he's praying. You know, he says, The refrain of the song, the chorus, it says, Krishna bhavantam vande, manma nasamata karma payinita patapankacha makadande. That's the second line. Very nice. So what does that mean? It says, Krishna, I bow down to you. You know, I bow down to you. Please place the bee of my restless mind in the honey of your lotus feet. That's actually what it means. One manasa, manasa of the mind. Madhukaram, just like a bee. Bee goes here and there, right? Looking for a flower. So he says, man manasa madhukaram apayanita patapankacha makadande. He says, you please place the bee of my mind in the honey of your lotus feet. Because you see the difference there. He says, I'm going to wrestle this mind down. And, you know, they said, no, Krishna, you do it. You know. So then the rest of the song, he's presenting himself as kind of helpless. He says, even Brahma, Lord Brahma, deep in trance, he can achieve a glimpse of your effulgent toenails, which he describes as, you know, this greatest benediction, to see Krishna's effulgent toenails. It's described that effulgence destroys the mountain of sin in the heart of the meditating devotee. This is Lord Kapiladeva. But even though Brahma can't get it, and who can compare to him in yoga? You know, his longevity, like, you know, the longest. And he said, well, he has difficulty. But still, because I've heard you're so compassionate, that I'm still desiring that boon of seeing this, that effulgent toenails. And then he prays again, oh, Krishna, dearest Lord, I bow to you, and then entreat, please place to be in my restless mind in the honey of your lotus feet. And then he says, Bhakti-ra-dancha-ra-yadya-bhi-madhava-natvai-mavati-lamatri. Oh, Madhava, despite great effort, I haven't attained even a drop of pure devotion to you. You know, I've been trying so hard. But because I know of how powerful you are, and you're the super soul of my heart, I'm still praying for that. You can make the impossible possible. So please, place to be in my restless heart in the honey of your lotus feet. And then the last verse, he says, And Rupa Goswami, one of the wonderful characteristics of his songs, he wrote part of the Savamala is a series of songs, of which the most famous is Radhe Jaya Jaya Madhava. And if you know, the last line contains this word Sanatan. Sanaka Sanatana Babita Charite. Yeah. So that Sanatan has two meanings, usually. It means this eternal Lord, or in this case, Sanatan Kumara, you know. Or it means Sanatan Goswami. He's actually showing honor to his, he regarded him as a kind of guru, his elder brother. Anyway, so the last verse says, oh, now my mind is fixed on your feet. I am overloaded without going anywhere else. And so I'm enjoying endless mellows, you know, of love, you know. So this is a very important lesson here, is that the ardent prayer that we utter through the Hare Krishna mantra, it's meant to be uttered prayerfully, like a child, you know, longing for its mother. Right? That's a prayer. That's an ardent desire. That, you know, moves Krishna to give us the power to control our mind or control our mind so that we can actually focus on it. It's a different focus, you know, different idea than the karma yogis, jnana yogis, and the ashtanga yogis. They're all relying on their strength of will, right? Or their intelligence, you know. But the bhakta relies on Krishna. And he just presents himself as completely helpless. I was just reading, Prabhupada's Markandeya Bhagavad Dharma. This is a great song he wrote. I think it's when he just landed in Boston Harbor. And, you know, nothing had happened yet. He's here in a foreign land all alone. You know, he's got a box of books and great faith, of course. But he's praying to Krishna. He says, I don't know how to convince them. This whole country is obviously steeped in the modes of passion and ignorance. So if you've sent me here, so please make my power of speech suitable to inspire them to take up Krishna consciousness. And you can see the result. This is the advantage of the bhakti yogi, is that he relies on Krishna, and Krishna is all-powerful. He's Yogeshwareshwara. He's the Lord of all yogis. So ultimately, we'll come to that point in the next chapter. But right now, he's giving us some very important instruction, that this mind, you know, is it's not us, but it's very close to us. And right now, it's giving us all kinds of demands and orders that are not for our benefit. That famous verse is important. Kama dinam katina katita palita duni deshas. Tesham jata mayana karunana tapano pashanti. That lust, etc., which has taken over the mind and the senses, intelligence, are my cruel masters. And they were all these orders, so many lifetimes, do this, go there, fear this, go there. I've been following them. But still, they don't show me any mercy. I'm not getting free, So, but now my intelligence is strengthened, is awoken, and I'm not going to follow those demands anymore. But there's one more line in the verse, though. He says, "Now you please me, engage me in your service." Because just saying I won't follow those demands is not enough, because you can't remain without a master. The mind must admit a higher force and follow it. So right now, that higher force is, the sense objects and the desires and Maya in general. But Krishna is more powerful than Maya. Daivyesha gunamahima maya dharatiya. So this is my Maya, and if you surrender unto me, then you can cross beyond it. Otherwise, she'll control you. And it's so insidious because you think you're in charge. I have freedom. This is the land of the free. I can go wherever I want. I have some money in my pocket and do what I want. But those wants, those very desires, is what's binding you. You see the difference? So Krishna consciousness, it changes the whole perspective. We want Krishna. We're attracted to serve Krishna because he's perfect surrender to the dictation of the Lord within. But that dictation is for our benefit. The dictation of the external energy and lust is not for our benefit. It's not for our benefit. But Krishna really has our best interests in mind. And this is what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about. Arjuna can't see it. He doesn't see how Krishna's dictation, which is to fight, kill Bhishma, kill Drona, kill all these friends and relatives of yours, that's against his, the material mind and senses rebels at that. But that's for his ultimate good, and ultimately for the good of even those who are going to be killed. That takes transcendental vision. So changing our whole focus so that we identify ourselves as Krishna's servants and having full faith that activity in that with that concept will be to our ultimate benefit. That's what Krishna consciousness is all about. And so even though we may not have the full faith, act that way anyway. That's the whole idea. We're not chanting purely. Shuddha Naam, chant anyway. Still chant, And try to avoid the offenses. Chant with devotees who are a little more advanced. Pick it up. It's catching. Prabhupada just found just how catching it was, You get the impression that he also was kind of surprised at how amazing Krishna worked through him to explode this movement. Well, why is that? Because it's catching. People picked up on Prabhupada's sincerity and they became a little advanced enough to attract others. And before long, he had a whole, a whole bunch of temples and cities and Hare Krishna was going on. Because it's genuine. The soul, when it really contacts Krishna again after all this time, There's a spark, for the receptive souls, the fortunate souls. And if you pursue it, you say, yes, this is the demand I want. I want to be controlled not by fear, not by lust, but by love. I want to reciprocate with love. People are doing it all over the world, the fake love, right? Why is the guy sacrificing, going to work all the time, and the woman, the mothers, or at least human beings, are sacrificing so much for their children. It's love. But it's love that's ephemeral. It's not real love. So that's real life. To every, if you, Goloka Vrindavan, the goal, the place where everything is, we're looking to go, is really a land it's a land of love. Everyone loves Krishna. Krishna loves everyone. And that's the and everything. And the motive for doing it is all in that. Varieties of love. How to express it this way, that way. Dancing, singing, serving. Playing hard to get. That's all part of it. It's very elaborate. All the emotions we have here are there in perfection and much, many more of them. And then, this whole world disappears. It's a bad dream. But right now, we're trying to enjoy the dream. Thank you. So to make the mind the friend, we have to conquer it. But to conquer it, we need Krishna's help. He's given us the tools and the weapon, the holy name chiefly. Okay, let's go on. Chitatmana prashantasya padamatma samahitaha shitoshna sukadukeshu tatamana pamanayo. For one who has conquered the mind, the super soul is already reached, for he has attained tranquility. To such a man, happiness and distress, heat and cold, honor and dishonor, are all the same. Put. Actually, every living entity is intended to abide by the dictation of the Supreme Personality of God, who is seated in everyone's heart as Paramatma. When the mind is misled by the external illusory energy, one becomes entangled in material activities. Therefore, as soon as one's mind is controlled through one of the yoga systems, one should be considered to have already reached the destination. One has to abide by superior dictation. When one's mind is fixed on the superior nature, he has no alternative but to follow the dictation of the Supreme. The mind must admit some of superior dictation and follow it. That's the line I was looking for. The mind must admit some superior dictation and follow it. The effect of controlling the mind is that one automatically follows the dictation of the Paramatma or Supersoul. Because this transcendental position is at once achieved by one who is in Krishna consciousness, the devotee of the Lord is unaffected by the dualities of material existence, namely distress and happiness, cold and heat, etc. This state is practical samadhi or absorption in the Supreme. And what's so wonderful about this is that it's obvious that Prabhupada is there. You know, I mean, he's writing this. He's not writing about something theoretical. He himself experienced this. You know, and we saw it practically. Here is someone who's coming from Bengal, you know, and he spent the winter, 65, 66, in New York, which was a very severe winter. I used to live there, you know. It's anyone who's lived in the northern climes. It's much harder if you're coming, you know, you're accustomed to a warmer climate. But he was there, staunchly following his spiritual master's order and trying to, you know, do what he could here. And he was happy within. He wasn't in distress. He wasn't like he was, you know, in great anxiety and, you know, abandoned on these shores or anything. He had that inner strength that comes exactly with what's being described here, completely in touch with the super soul, with Krishna, and never alone, even though externally he seemed to be all alone. So, you know, this is the... Now, I have this little phrase that comes from a verse, and is pertinent to this. There's a verse by Queen Kunti in her wonderful prayers near the end where she says, Tvai me ananya vishaya matir madupate asakrit ratimun vahatara dha gange baugamadanvati. O Madhu's Lord, Krishna was the Lord of the Madhu dynasty. That's another name for Vishnu dynasty. O Madhu's Lord, please ever fill my mind with thoughts of thee, not any other kind. As Ganges' torrent flows into the sea, let all my love flow constantly to thee. This is the meaning of that prayer. So, notice that the first head, the first line, which we have is two lines, but here we have one. Tvai me ananya vishaya matir. The word mati means mind. Madhupate asakrit. Asakrit means always. Sakrit means once, asakrit means not once. In other words, always. Vishaya, let there be no other object or subject of subject matter for thinking in my mind but you. Tvayi, let my mind always be absorbed in you. And then the second line, she talks about love, rati. So first comes mati, then comes rati. Okay, it's a nice little slogan. First mati, then rati. In other words, first we have to absorb the mind in Krishna. There may not be any attraction, but we have the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Chanting till the mind is pacified and we're thinking of Krishna. And just by thinking of Krishna, the emotion wakes up. That's what's mentioned here. As soon as one's mind, you know, is controlled, then you have achieved the destination. You know, now the destination here may not be elaborately described, as with all of the rasas and all of the things that we know is there in Bhakti Yoga. But the point here is that basically we're already there, but we don't know we are. What's preventing us from perceiving our natural Krishna consciousness, life after life, is this mad mind. We're seeing ourselves through the lens of the mind that is now covered by the dust of lust. Right? That's mentioned, Lord Chaitanya says, Cheto Darpana Marjanam, that the chanting cleanses the mirror of the mind, or the lens of the mind, if you will, so that you can finally see things as they are. And what do you perceive? There's Krishna in your heart. There's Shyamasundara. There's the whole spiritual world, you know, that we've been searching for out there, but it's not out there, it's in here. So we're simply trying to quiet the mind so that we can perceive Krishna internally and externally. And then when that happens, the natural love awakens. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kavanoi. Shabanadi Shuddha Chitte Kariyayudoi. That the eternal perfection of Krishna Prema is already there. It's not something external that you bring in. Not artificial. By hearing a chanting, etc., the consciousness becomes purified, Shuddha Chitte, and Kariyayudoi, it awakens. You don't have to, you know, try artificially to bring it. So that's the meaning of this verse. And one of the preliminary results is that one becomes transcendental to the dualities. If you're really absorbed in Krishna, then the dualities of this world don't impinge upon you as much. You know, pleasure and pain. That's described also by Kapila Dev. The panti vivadastapa naitan magata chetasa. If your cheta is gone to Krishna, then the tapan, the miseries of this world, don't bother you as much, you know, because you're absorbed, you know. And so much of that bother is mental, isn't it? You know, so much is anticipating, you know, and then lamenting what happened, isn't it? So here it says, shitoshna sukadukeshu, the cold, heat, pleasure and pain, tata mana apamanayu. When we, what is it? Samahita. What does it say?
Honor and dishonor.
Yeah. Prashantasya. One remains peaceful even in all of these dualities here. Practical samadhi, or absorption in the Supreme. So it seems practically inconceivable that, you know, from our background we could attain something like that. But we have to have faith, just like in that song. By Krishna's strength, he's all powerful. He can make even us worthy. Oftentimes, this word faith is so the concept of faith is so important, but it has many dimensions. One is, of course, that we have faith that this is true. We have faith in the gurus and all of our acharyas, right? That they're revealing to us a world that is completely mysterious to us and the world at large, but it's there. There's something real there. We have faith. And of course, it's not by practice we experience some of it. So it's not just pure faith. Then we have also some experience, but not in the whole thing. But part of that faith in Krishna, in the parampara, and the whole shastra, is that Krishna can empower even us to practice. You know, because one of the main problems in devotional practice is weakness of heart. Basically, I can't do it. Yes, it may be a wonderful thing, but I can't do it. You know, so this word vridya dalbalyam comes up in the Gita here at the beginning. Krishna says, give up this weakness of heart and get up and fight. Because I'll help you. You just be my nimittamatam bhavasatyasacha. So this has been proved in this movement. Devotees have done things that seem totally impossible. You know, of course, Prabhupada did the impossible. It seemed impossible. But he also empowered us to do the impossible. Those who are pretty much like us, you know, going off and starting a center in Germany alone, you know. You go and you start a center. You hear these stories. They were traveling in northern India, and one life member got on right near Delhi, and he says, okay, you, Yamuna, you get off, and you follow him, and then you start the center in Delhi, or wherever it was. This gentleman will help you. Okay, Prabhupada, whatever you want. And somehow they did it, you know. Before long, there's a center there, you know. Or even just putting out the magazine, you know, BTG magazine. Nobody knew how to put out a magazine. All right, you started a magazine. Okay, we figured it out somehow or other, you know. So in the same way, Krishna can empower us to control the mind, to become detached from things that we've been addicted to for a million years, you know, and to give us everything we need to advance toward Him. But the process, you know, the principle of surrender and prayer and humility and really making the effort. He's looking for us to make an effort. Then He helps. So that's to come to this state of being indifferent to shitoshna sugadukeshu is practically inconceivable. But if you can conquer the mind, or you know, by the process of devotional service centered on chanting the holy name, then we too can reach the goal. Prabhupada certainly hoped that we could, even in one lifetime. You have to have that faith. Okay, getting a little late now, so we'll end there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
Sure.